It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRack Sports, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. Cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRack Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
So the Locked On Podcast Network, that big network that we are a part of, is doing this new thing where we all the NBA hosts, right, we have this weekly email thread and we have to vote on who we think the top 10 teams are in the NBA at that time, a power rankings of sorts for our network. Yes. And we just started doing that recently, and we're going to tell you the results of what the network thinks are the best 10 teams in the league right now. That'll be coming up later on. We're also going to open up the mailbag today as well, because it's Monday and that's what we do around here, and that's coming up later. But let's start with David, Dwayne Wade's first game back. We've obviously talked a lot about Dwayne Wade, but we got a chance to see him in his first game back with the Heat on Friday night in the Heat's win over the Bucks. They beat Milwaukee 91-85, broke a 5-game losing streak, which was a phenomenal way to bring Wade back, right? Wade didn't have that great of a game, 3 points on 1 of 6 shooting, 2 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, but he quite obviously had an impact on the court, just as far as the energy that I think everybody was playing with. There was just everybody was excited, from everybody in the crowd, in the, you know, on the team. It just seemed like there was a different vibe, obviously, with the team, and I think that really helped power them over the Bucks in that game.
Did you get to watch it live?
I did.
Yeah, so did I. It was the first time in a long time that I found myself kind of screaming along with the TV. Like, it was just, it suddenly hit me as he's coming back in. And for, you know, the past season and a half of us talking about him as kind of this, you know, ethereal object somewhere outside in the NBA landscape, here he was actually returning back into the lineup. And when he went in there to go play, it was as exciting a moment as I've seen in a long, long time. And it was great, great, great drama. And I felt every bit of that energy there. It was an electric crowd. Certainly did, I think, contribute toward Miami's win. Like, obviously his performance on the court was spotty, because I think those are the kind of performances we're going to get from him at this age. And as he tries to adjust alongside players that he has never really played with, and tries to figure it out. And, you know, so for now it's that energy is going to help provide some boost, but at some point he's going to have to, you know, adapt, and I'm sure that he will. He'll figure it out, as well as the other players around him. That lob to Whiteside, I think, really indicative of how he expects to have, like, this kind of chemistry right away. Like, he made a really nice pass to Whiteside, made several other nice passes throughout the course of the game. You know, his shot wasn't following, unfortunately, and he just doesn't have the explosiveness to get past even a team like Milwaukee that doesn't really have much rim protection. He wasn't able to get past initial defenders and get to the rim. You know, he had some wide open shots. He just wasn't knocking those down, unfortunately. Did contribute some nice defense. 2 blocks, 2 steals. I mean, that was – he looked like he had some smart timing there. But I think, you know, the fact that he led the huddle to begin the game, and maybe it's because it's his team and because he – you know, the excitement of him coming back. But that says a lot about the fact that everybody on this team, whether they've been there before or played alongside him before, sees him as the leader of this team, a guy that has a voice. And that's got to mean a lot to him, considering that he was just basically a cog in the LeBron machine in Cleveland. And you know, or that, you know, he was struggling in Chicago with that team there that really didn't care to listen to him.
And he said after the game, basically, like, this is it. I'm not going anywhere else. I'm staying here for the rest of my career, you know, until he decides to hang him up. And that was obvious, but it was good to hear him say it too. So, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about what he was doing on the court and just how the Heat used him, because we've obviously covered the emotional angle of this so much. And that really is the big story here, but he has helped. He did help the Heat in that game. And look, he had a negative box plus minus. He didn't have a very impressive stat line, but he helped the team in a way. Like, He's basically the backup point guard at this point, right? And we've heard from our own listeners via the mailbag or people on Twitter and people saying, like, this team lacks direction when Goran Dragic is on the floor. And Spoelstra staggered Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade the entire game until the very last minute. And that was a pretty interesting, I think, development that Spoelstra decided he had to close with Dwayne Wade on the floor along with Dragic. And I wonder if we're going to see that going forward. But for so much of the game, in the past, we've seen Spoelstra stagger Goran Dragic and Josh Richardson. Josh Richardson really starting in December, he started doing that just to make sure he had a ball creator on the floor at all times. But with Wade now, he's able to play Richardson and Dragic together more often, Richardson and Wade together more often, and stagger Dragic and Wade as opposed to Dragic and Richardson, which puts more of Miami's better players on the floor together more often, which is just in itself is just going to help the Heat be a little bit more consistent, especially on the offensive end when they do seem to slow down, when they get to their bench a little bit more. And I think that those, if what Wade can do is take those like 3 or 4 minute stretches of just scoring droughts that the Heat have almost every game and chop those in half a little bit, just because the rotation is a little bit more dynamic, then that's a huge win for the Heat.
What did you think of his chemistry alongside the team? Obviously, there was a couple of nice passes, as I mentioned before, but there seemed like there was some adjustment there. I think particularly between him and James Johnson, kind of like that's deciding, who to move the ball to, when to bring the ball up. That's like James really needs the ball in his hands so much, and he's so used to it. We've seen him have these kind of issues with Goran, like where he wants to bring the ball up and he feels like he needs to have it in his hand in order to be effective. And a guy like Dwayne, like I saw him make the conscious effort to kind of defer to Dwayne, but at the same time then kind of like say, well, I need to get mine too. I need to get my touches. I need to do what I need to do in order to initiate offense. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. I'm glad that they were able to have this kind of extended break before they go on the road. Like, I mean, their first game of the, after that first game is on Tuesday. So they've got three days to practice, travel to Toronto, et cetera. So they've got enough time, I think, to kind of develop a little bit more familiarity with one another on the floor. So that should help a lot. But I'm curious what you saw, if anything else.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing with James Johnson. That's going to be interesting. The other, there's a little bit more fallout from having Wade on there as a guy who needs the ball. Justice Winslow didn't do any backup point guarding, because now that's basically Dwayne Wade's job. So you and I have talked a lot about Justice Winslow as far as his development, where it goes. And he's been playing small ball four with Kelly Olynyk out. But when Kelly Olynyk gets back, I wonder what Winslow's role is going to be. I think Tyler Johnson probably goes back to the bench. Winslow plays small forward. Richardson's playing the two next to Dragic. And then you'll have Wade and Tyler Johnson coming off the bench for the backcourt. That's probably what it is. Ellington coming off the bench as well as that other guard slash third guard that the Heat basically play with.
Winslow went 0 for 6 too. I mean, he seemed particularly bad at the rim. Like, his explosiveness was on point. He seemed like there were several moments where he was able to drive past an initial defender and get really good looks at the rim. Those shots just weren't following. That was really sad to see that. He can go 0 for 6 in a night like that, where he looked positive doing everything else. He finished with 6 rebounds too and a block. So he was engaged, just unfortunately couldn't knock down those shots.
I want to see what the Heat end up doing with Winslow, because he was developing and getting so much energy from having the ball in his hands more often. I think playing more effectively offensively and defensively. I thought he just was playing with more energy on both ends of the court because he had the ball in his hands more often. I want to see them going forward get him the ball more, whether Wade is on the floor or not. Let Winslow bring the ball up, let him facilitate, because that's what he's very good at that. He's still developing as a shooter and he's inconsistent at that end, but they got to get the ball in his hands more often. Yeah. Some more news before we get to this mailbag. Kelly Olynyk didn't practice again with that shoulder injury that he's been dealing with. He will not travel with the team for the next two games, those games in Toronto and in Philadelphia. David, what have you noticed in Olynyk's absence? Do you think that they stick with this lineup that they've been rolling out with Winslow at the four? Do you see maybe Luke Babbitt's return eventually?
I think Babbitt will get to start, to be honest with you, because I think he provides that space floor, that floor spacing. He fits a nice role there. He's comfortable enough. He's not a great defender, but I think he's capable enough in this system he showed that at moments last year where he's not that necessarily that bad. Look, at worst, he's going to be and he's going to provide that Babbitt stat line of 0, 0, and 0. But he's not going to be a negative, I suppose, on the team, or maybe just as his presence. I don't know. I think he'll still be the starter because if he gets a couple of shots, he'll be able to knock those down. He won't play a lot of minutes. It's not about who starts. I think it'll be he won't get the majority of the playing time at that position.
I wonder what kind of shape he's in after basically riding the bench in Atlanta too. If he's in game shape, I think you're right. I think he should be starting. That would make a lot of sense because then you sort of. That seems to be the Spoelstra way is like Babbitt would be starting. Olenek comes back, retakes his starting spot at the four, and then we never see Luke Babbitt again. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if he's able to do that even to do it for like 10 to 12 minutes a game as like the spot starter, just because we don't know what kind of shape he's in. I'm sure he's fine, but I'm also sure that being in Miami, he'll ramp it up quite a bit there.
Absolutely.
In other news, Roddy Magruder participated in his first full shoot around Monday morning. That's really exciting news. Where do you see him fitting in on this roster?
I don't. I honestly don't. I know Spoelstra is so in love with his ability to make those quote unquote winning plays that he'll find time for him. I'm just not sure where that will be. It's not as a starter, not at this point. I think it's too late in the season to just inject him into the starting lineup. But I could see him trying to find some minutes for him. But obviously now. I mean, he could go with a completely new lineup, like five starters, clear them out, and go with five reserve players, with Magruder, mm-hmm. James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, once he goes back to the bench, and then Magruder as well, alongside Dwayne Wade. I mean, that could be a whole new, five-man lineup that he could inject off the bench. It's going to be tough. It's a good problem to have, I suppose, but you do have to find some kind of chemistry there and what units work best. You don't want to make these changes too late in the season, but unfortunately there's no choice here. No matter, you're trying to incorporate a guy who did produce and did help Miami win last year. He was a big part of that 30-11 finish. So I think you need to find some playing time for him.
Yeah, he's an effective 3-point shooter. He showed really in the second half of last season and in the preseason before he got hurt.
Yeah, I wonder if that's improved because, with him resting, not being able to do much else, he can be a standstill shooter, at least in practice, the mechanics there.
Yeah, and once he gets his rhythm alongside other players in the game, I'm sure it'll be there. Yeah. So he helps in that regard, and Miami needs that. And then Miami likes guys who work really hard, and Magruder does that. Like, they don't need more guys who need the ball, right? They just acquired Wade. Dragic is there, obviously. Richardson has been developing and blooming. But Magruder fits alongside those guys really well. Just like, he complements those skill sets. But you're right. Where do you play that guy? That's the interesting part of this. I almost feel like Magruder's minutes would have to come at a cost of Justice Winslow. And you just don't want that to be the case. You know what I mean? Because you've invested so much in Winslow already. And you really need to find out where this guy is. And I don't think that if you started playing Magruder more minutes than Winslow, I think that would all but end Winslow's development in Miami. I mean, that would just kill it, right? Because you bring in a guy who hasn't played all season and give him the minutes. And I'm not saying this is going to be the case, but I just don't think that Spoelstra could do it for Winslow. And Winslow's been good. Winslow's been an awesome defender. He's been back to his elite level that we saw was from his rookie year. So I don't even think it would be a good move anyway, but it'll be interesting to see where they find those minutes for him.
It just seems like Magruder is better suited because, like you just pointed out, there are so many guys that need the ball in their hands, and we have so many of them, that a guy like Magruder is almost a better fit because he doesn't need the ball. He's a guy who's a catch-and-shoot, a release valve on offense, a guy who, when the defense collapses, that's when he'll drive to the rim, and we saw more and more of that. He's not going to initiate offense or be a playmaker. He's a guy who finishes. Winslow's on the other end of the spectrum where he initiates offense and he doesn't finish as well as he has to. And he needs a ball in his hand in order to be most effective, but he also hasn't been finishing at an efficient level. And so you wonder if maybe he's just not qualified to play out there. I mean, it's tough because, we've been impressed with his development and we've seen some nice things from him, but he needs to be able to play better. Like, he just doesn't seem like there's any sense of urgency there. And that bothers me.
Yeah, I'm kind of going through this lineup right now, right before we go on to our mailbag segment here. But if you hypothetically started Dragic, Magruder, for those reasons we were just talking about, Richardson, Olenek, and Whiteside, you're still having, you could still bring Wade and Tyler Johnson off the bench. Winslow comes in behind Josh Richardson,
right?
James Johnson and Bam, but that's not a lot of spacing on that second unit. I mean, you could bring in Ellington instead of Tyler Johnson, or play Ellington instead of James Johnson and play Winslow at the four. I mean, there's a number of ways you could do that,
yeah.
But that's basically 11 guys that Spoelstra have to find time for. And you could do that in the regular season. You could play 11 guys, not a problem. Tyler Johnson could probably afford to take fewer minutes. You play Ellington and Magruder, you split those minutes up at the two guard spot. But then come the playoffs and you want to shorten that to 8 or 9 guys, that's tough. But it's like you said before, though, it's not a bad problem to have, right?
Yeah.
We're going to get to our mailbag next. But first, before we move on with the show, we want to take a quick break and tell you about our Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat, and we are humbly asking for people to commit to a monthly pledge to help us continue to improve the show.
We want to thank everybody who's already gone and made the effort to support the show. We've quickly reached our initial funding goal, and that's allowed us to purchase the software that we're currently using to improve the sound quality of this podcast that you enjoy so much.
By going to patreon.com/lockedonheat and becoming a patron, you will become an official Locked On Heat board member. David and I like to hear from you, and by creating this board, we will have a group of dedicated listeners to bounce ideas for the show off of, and you'll have the opportunity to influence the podcast. Plus, you get to tell your friends that you're on a board.
Look, we hate to ask, but we do need your help as much as you can possibly give it, so please go check it out. It's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat.
So what does the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network think the top 10 teams in the league are? Do they have the Miami Heat among their top 10 teams? We'll get to that in our power rankings later on. But first, we got to open up the mailbag because that's what we do on Mondays. This comes from Patreon supporter Marcus, and he asks, "Hey guys, do you think Josh Richardson has what it takes to be a star in the NBA, and will other stars want to play with him? I think D-Wade might be able to help get him there." David, I think you brought this point up before, right? The idea of Dwayne Wade's maybe mentorship over Josh Richardson, maybe helping Richardson kind of take that next step.
Yes, absolutely. I think kind of showing him, look, obviously Richardson is a workhorse, a guy who's made the effort to kind of improve his game over the last 3 years. He's bounced back from injury. He's made it to this point at first place, and he's gone paid, which I think is the ultimate reward in the NBA, at least the ultimate gauge of how – you know, how a team values your work ethic. So I think he's on the right path towards that. And I could see Wade at this point in his career. I've always been critical of Wade as a quote-unquote mentor just because I don't think he was ever that type of player. He was always a guy who was more of, look, I'm great. This is what I do. This is how I lead by example. It's up to you to kind of fill that in. But I think now seeing what happened in Chicago, seeing what happened in Cleveland, and seeing that from LeBron as he guides another team there, it's not the same kind of dynamic as D-Wade and LeBron shared in Miami. It's a little bit different there. So I think he kind of has to adjust. And I see his vibe change a little bit. Like, he understands now he's the elder statesman on the team, mm-hmm. Alongside a guy like Udonis, mm-hmm. who is an active mentor for bigs like Adebayo and Whiteside. I could see him kind of shape Jay Rich as far as his evolution on the floor. But now, you know, as far as what it takes to attract other star players, that's more off the court. And I wonder if Richardson has those kinds of connections or if he's made those kinds of connections so far. He really hasn't had the opportunity, unfortunately. Yeah. You have to be there at all-star activities. You have to be there at parties elsewhere. You have to be able to connect with these guys, off the court. And so far, he hasn't made that kind of name for himself. So it's going to take some time. It could happen, but I don't see it in the foreseeable future.
Right, and it usually happens with guys like in his draft class, and we can look at that draft class. And
it's a great one, yeah.
It's a good draft class, but I don't those conversations for whether or not these people are going to be free agents and start getting on the move aren't happening for another 3 or 4 years. You know what I mean? Because most of them are going to be locked into their rookie scale deals anyway, and be retained by their respective teams right now that they're on. So those conversations may be one day in the future. But I mean, Dwayne Wade was drafted 2003; he didn't start attracting free agents until 2010. You know what I mean? And it takes a while just for those guys to shake loose of their initial contracts or their initial two contracts that usually end up being the case. But as far as you know, Wade's mentorship over Josh Richardson, look, even if Dwayne Wade doesn't take a hands-on approach and is still lead by example, you know, and I think he is going to take a little bit more of a mentorship role over Josh Richardson, especially seeing like he's had eyes on Richardson for the last 3 years and how he's developed. And I think he thinks he can help him, and I'm sure he can. But let's just say if Richardson just watches Wade, we've already seen him steal moves from Goran Dragic. Josh Richardson is a sponge. He takes moves and he puts them in his own repertoire. I mean, that little the rich kid lefty scoop that he's got, he stole that directly from Goran Dragic, and now he gets credit for that. You know, almost to the point where I think Dragic did it in Miami's game against Milwaukee, I think. And then and then Tony gave credit to Richardson for it. It's like, hey, that was the Josh Richardson. I'm like, no, Tony, that was Dragic's move. Richardson stole it and perfected it, and now he has it. And I could see him watching Dwayne Wade now up close and in person and maybe taking that little, you know, go to the left shimmy bank shot that Wade has. It's not a bank shot anymore, but used to be a bank shot. Or like that turnaround on the block or something like that, and maybe incorporating that into his game. I could see him doing
the pump
that, which
fake. Would be exciting. Oh, the pump fake. He gets that pump. I mean, he has to.
Yeah, you've talked about needing to get to the line more often. That would certainly help. Our next mailbag question comes from Chikorito Marito. He's had a – Chikorito here has had, like, I think the last three mailbags has had something in here. He's doing a good job. Yeah, good question.
Absolutely. We appreciate it.
It's easy to see his name pop up on the Twitter feed, too. You just can't miss it. What is Bam's potential offensive ceiling? With the Heat lacking scoring, is it conceivable that Bam could be a 20-10 / Draymond type in the near future? Can he be a top 20 player? Are we biased and overrating him? What do other franchises think of his potential? So,
that's a lot to digest there. Huh?
So, I mean, look, what do we think Bam's potential is? Let's start with that last point. What do other franchises think of his potential? I haven't talked to other teams about Bam Adebayo, but I could tell you that from people that don't cover the Heat, they still love Bam Adebayo. I mean, Zach Lowe has tweeted about Bam's potential a lot lately. You know, friend of the program, Chris Barnwell over at CBS Sports, he loves Bam Adebayo. I mean, there are guys that are covering, you know, other teams that just are watching Heat games, tuning in every once in a while, and Bam will flash what he flashes and fall in love with this guy. I mean, his hustle is great. I think his potential is obvious. He's just such a raw athlete that you could just see it there.
I don't see him as a guy yet that's popping up on scouting reports.
Yeah.
Because his game is still limited. You know, he's not known for, as a playmaker, although he's a smart passer, obviously. He's known as just a hustle guy, and that's great. I mean, those are players that have been making contributions throughout the history of the league. So I think he's viewed positively. I just don't know that you change the way you defend the Heat because of Bam's presence on the floor. At this point in time, the most glaring hole in his game is what keeps him from being that kind of dominant player, as you know, being able to spot up from outside. The fact that he can use his current athleticism to get past players is fine, but at the same time, you need to be able to expand and diversify your game, and his game is unfortunately way too limited at this point. He's catching lobs, he's catching rebounds and finishing in traffic. And that's basically it. And so he needs to be able to change his game around as far as making a huge impact that other teams start to notice. I think fans and media types will definitely respond to kind of his effort and explosiveness. But at the same time, I don't know that he's making an impact on scouting reports across the league just yet. Not yet.
And that's fine. I mean, he's a rookie. Most rookies are bad. Yeah, and sure. That's fine. But, you know, I do wonder what the Heat, what their direction for him is, because I worry that if Whiteside sticks around in Miami long-term, and he is on a long-term deal right now, I do wonder if Bam kind of falls into that Justice Winslow situation where, look, you obviously play this one position really well. We can't play you here all the time because we have other guys we have to play. So we're going to force you into this other position. And then in Bam's case, it would be power forward next to Whiteside. And there seems to be a split among whether or not that front court is good. I don't think it's good. I don't think you can play Bam and Whiteside together for long stretches. The reason Milwaukee was able to come back in that game on Friday night in that fourth quarter was because Spoelstra went with Bam and Whiteside in that front court. And he sort of had to. I think he should have played James Johnson a little bit more, but James Johnson had logged quite a few minutes into that game and was playing really hard in that game. Good game for James Johnson, by the way. So I see why I had to play Bam, but they were just not able to score, and Milwaukee was. But as far as Adebayo's ceiling, I kind of like the Draymond Green comparison as far as what Bam could do defensively. I mean, we saw him go one-on-one with Giannis. You know what I mean? We saw him guard guy. We've seen him guard guys out of the perimeter. We've seen him guard guys like Blake Griffin on the block. I mean, he can guard all five positions, truly guard all five positions.
He could be a better defender than Draymond, which is saying a lot for the defensive player of the year. But I think he has
the size.
He has the size, the length, the athleticism, the mobility to be able to guard players one through five. I think even more than Draymond. Like, he may not be as strong as Draymond at this point, but he's what, only 19 still? So there's plenty of time for him to make that leap. Wait till he's in his early, wait till he's old enough to buy a light beer before we put the cap on his career there. But offensively, though, which is I think where Chicorito Morito is asking, 20 and 10 seems like a stretch. Like, he is not that type of player just yet.
That's Carl Anthony Towns level. And we don't think he'll be that. Or
nobody talks about Carl Anthony Towns being in Minnesota and making the kind of impact he's making. But yeah, he's a much better player and not in the same league as Bam Adebayo or vice versa. Bam is not in the same league as that. Not a top 20 player either, I don't think. He's a good player. He's a very good player. He shows a lot of potential, a lot of athleticism. Again, that game needs to expand quite a bit. Look, when Carl Anthony came into the league a couple seasons ago and started shooting threes, and he's a really adept passer, and he's a seven-footer, a legit seven-footer that can finish in traffic and finish around the rim. I mean, that's game-changing. That's historical, generational-type talent. I don't know that Adebayo fits into that same category. Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever will. He's a very, very good player who has a lot of hustle, a lot of athleticism, and shows some nice touch around the basket that needs to expand, like I said before. And if that's the case, if he does expand, then we can talk about him maybe being a top 50 player some way down the line. Not right now. It's years away from that.
And he can be an all NBA defensive player. I think that's certainly possible.
Particularly if they clear the Whiteside logjam too. If like he gets,
he needs to play center. That's what I was getting at. I mean, he can't be playing power forward. He can't. I mean, to best utilize somebody like Bam right now, you've got to play him at center. I mean, this is somebody that needs to be able to get switched onto point guards in 1-5 pick and rolls. I mean, that's where he is best, and that's where the league is going. And at some point, the Heat are going to have to reconcile that. You know, between having Bam and Whiteside, because I think there's only room enough for one of them, unfortunately. Yeah. Offensively for Bam, I think he can become a catch and shoot guy. I just don't think he's naturally gifted, like you were saying, like Towns is or Kristaps Porzingis is or some of these other unicorn types are. But maybe if he can get out there and shoot 30% like Draymond, that's fine. But if he's playing center, he's not even going to need to do that. He's just going to need to be able to finish at the rim and then just guard at an all NBA level, which I think that's in the cards for him later on. But he's like you said, he's only 20. We can't even dream to guess where he's going to end up. So let's get to our power rankings next. But first, a quick reminder to make sure that you are subscribed to Locked On Heat. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as on Spotify.
Subscribing is the best way to support the show, as well as our Patreon page. Another great way to support the show is to leave us a review on iTunes. It increases our rankings and helps other Heat fans discover the show. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so we're debuting these power rankings that we did with the Locked On Podcast Network. We described it earlier, but basically all the hosts on the NBA shows get together. We do this big survey thing, and we decide who the top 10 teams are right now in the league. And let's just start at number one, because I don't think it's going to surprise anybody, and I think it's more exciting to go the other way, right?
Yeah.
Number one, without a doubt, is the Warriors. I mean, we just start right there. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody.
It's closer than you might have thought, though.
And that's true.
I think, and you know, we saw Houston and James Harden dominate Miami, but I think this game and the last game that Miami played were kind of like moral victories for Miami fans. I think we saw that we could kind of hang a little bit with a top-rated team, but I think that speaks more to Miami's style of play and their defense, not what Houston is normally capable of. Like, you know, and again, Houston was without, was it three starting players? Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and Trevor Ariza. So this is
Gordon
not,
comes off the bench, but he basically plays starter minutes. Yeah,
exactly. So, I mean, three type, you know, really key contributors for that Rockets team. They're very, very good. So I'm a little surprised that it's not as close as it is, but at the same time, not that surprised.
Yeah, so the Warriors, they ended up, I'm still not sure how these point totals work, but I'm just going to read them off because you're saying how close it is. The Warriors ended up with 122 points, votes. I don't know how that worked. I don't know how
Well, yeah, exactly. It's a survey. Remember, it was a survey kind of listing 1 through 10 where you rank these top 10 teams.
Right.
So, yeah, so for, you know, the 30-some-odd hosts rank the Warriors as 10, I imagine Locked On Rockets probably put Houston on top. So we'll see.
Come on, Locked On Rockets, homers. How could they – whatever. So the Warriors got 122 points. The Rockets ended up with 117 points. So that's why it's very close. The Raptors. So those are your top two, and they're clearly, you know, head and heels above everybody else. But the Raptors are at 3 with 103 points, and the Celtics are at 4 with 101. And those are kind of the next that next tier. So Raptors at 3, Celtics at 4. What do you think about that?
You know, I think the survey came out at time before we saw what Boston did against Cleveland on Sunday. They laid an egg. Cleveland blew them out pretty handily with a rebuilt roster playing their first real action together. And Boston just did not look good. Their defense was not good. Their offense was not good.
They were blown out by the Rockets the game before that too, right?
Yeah. Not looking like a top four team at all. So,
by the Raptors. I'm sorry. I said the Rockets. They were blown up by the Raptors.
Yeah, that's right. No, you're right. So I don't know. I'm starting to kind of waffle a little bit on the Celtics and wondering whether or not the Raptors are the very best team in the Eastern Conference. And I know a lot of people are used to, and I don't think this is going to change until they prove otherwise, until they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or make it past into the finals. I don't know that anybody's going to view the Raptors in any other way as a team built for the regular season that's going to collapse in the postseason.
I mean, right now, the way that they're playing, Toronto is they're playing the best out of any team in the Eastern Conference. And I think in the spirit of what a power rankings are, that's why we would have them at 3 as a network. They are right now, they are just playing better than anybody else in the East. And so it makes sense. I have no problem with them at 3, but the Celtics at 4. I mean, even with Boston dropping their last two games. And like you said, I think these votes came out before those two games, but I don't have a problem with either of them. I don't have a problem with this top four at all right now, especially just given the way these people were playing at the time that we were voting. Next, we have the Timberwolves at 5 and the Spurs at 6. People are loving the Timberwolves right now. I mean, they're playing great these last 10 games, and Jimmy Butler in particular looks amazing. I mean, as good as he has all season, and he's been playing at an MVP level.
Well, it's kind of weird, you know, because I think that's a perception. They're 4-6 over their last 10. So they've actually kind of struggled a little bit. I know they're and people I still think see this team as a great defensive team because of Jimmy Butler. It's actually been their offense that has been most impressive throughout the course of the season. So it's kind of weird how people view them as a group. But I mean, certainly Butler has been playing really well. Anthony Towns, I think, has obviously been great. Andrew Wiggins is kind of hit or miss. You never know what you're getting with him. And I think also that just speaks to the overall fatigue of a team like San Antonio. Like, you're just so used to them being in it, but you kind of overlook whatever it is that they do. You fail to realize that even without Kawhi Leonard, with a team kind of slapped together, they're still holding opponents to 98 points per game, 98 points, and scoring 101.5. I mean, they're very, very good. They're 35-22, so two less losses than the Timberwolves. You know, they're 8 full games behind Houston, so there's a big gap there. But at the same time, they're the third best team in the Western Conference, and maybe even one of the top four teams in the league itself.
So I have the Spurs above in my personal rankings. I had the Spurs over Minnesota.
Yeah.
But it wasn't much different. I think I had Warriors, Rockets, Raptors, Celtics, Spurs, Timberwolves, as opposed to what the network has. You had the same thing?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Number 7 is the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that kind of rounds out your top 7 there, because everything after that is pretty close. So the Thunder, with 61 points, were ranked 7th. I love this Thunder team. I am really liking it. It's really unfortunate that Andre Roberson went down and will be out for the season, because I think with Roberson there, they could have beaten anybody in the West. And I mean anybody in a series, just because of how good that tandem of Roberson and Paul George is on the wings. I mean, you look at the Warriors don't do well, and they turn the ball over and they don't play great transition defense. And I think the transition defense thing is just because of the regular season. I think that'll amp up in the postseason, but I still think turnovers could be an issue for them. And nobody creates more turnovers than the Thunder. they get more steals than anybody else. And Roberson and Paul George in particular were really good at getting steals and anticipating passing lanes on the wing. Now Roberson's out, but Paul George is still there, and he's playing as good basketball as I've ever seen Paul George play next to Russell Westbrook. He's playing great.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they – I'm sure Sam Presti was trying to make a move. I'm just kind of surprised that they weren't able to pull the trigger on anything in particular. So their ceiling might ultimately be lowered as a result of Roberson's injury and you know, the fact that and the fact that they couldn't do anything about it. It's also surprising. I think this is like a really interesting team because of how they were struggling so much earlier in the season, and I wonder how quickly fans will respond and be able to change the narrative midseason, because you know they looked so miserable at first, and now they're playing so much more collectively, and I think you can't overstate. Like, Paul George is probably not going to be an MVP type candidate because his numbers are too low playing alongside guys like Westbrook and Carmelo, et cetera. But I think he deserves as much credit for being a rock steady performer. Like Westbrook, Westbrook can shoot you in and out of games. Carmelo is not the star he once was at this point in his career, but Paul George has been the consistent force there.
Steven Adams is their third best player, and I think that's pretty obvious. It's not Carmelo Anthony. Yeah, it's Steven Adams.
That's fair. But I remember being in that locker room earlier in the season. I think it was early December, and that team was just a mess, and they just seemed like they hated each other, and a bunch of prima donnas couldn't fit. And I think that's losing that makes everything so uncomfortable around that team. But it did look uncomfortable for them, and it was weird to see them, and now they've kind of bounced back. So
they figured it out. I mean, they figured out that Paul George is Robin next to Russell Westbrook's Batman.
Yes.
And that you get what you get out of Carmelo Anthony on a given night. Like, he might show up for you and be an offensive firehouse like he can be sometimes. And sometimes he's not. And then if he's not, you just don't pass him the ball as much.
You know, as a comic book aficionado, I have to take I have a problem with that Batman comparison for Westbrook.
Oh,
he's more like the Tick as far as like superheroes are concerned.
So that would make Paul George what then?
Arthur is his sidekick. I would love to see
you
Westbrook.
You need to write this. Oh my gosh.
I would love to see Westbrook donning an all Oklahoma City Thunder blue, yelling spoon as he takes the court, because that's the Tick.
I don't understand the reference. Okay. But I'm going to start calling Russell Westbrook the Tick.
There you go. That's perfect. I love it.
You do it and I'll retweet it because I don't have the credit. I don't have the street cred to pull it off. The Wizards are at 8 and then the Bucks are at 9 here. So look, neither of those teams are playing that well. You know, the Wizards were playing okay when John Wall first got hurt. I think they've sort of regressed to the mean a little bit there.
Yeah.
The Bucks are, you know, on a game to game basis, they might be the most inconsistent team in the league. And just having dropped that game to Miami, I think that they're there because I think there's a clear top 7 in the NBA, and that's just sort of the rest of them here. I think Wizards, Bucks, I mean, you could have easily seen Detroit in there with Blake Griffin. You could have seen Miami in there, I think, but they've been a little injured, especially at the time of the voting. But Wizards and Bucks, anything that you want to comment on there, or just kind of?
No, I mean,
before we get to number 10,
the Wizards are a rough team. They played well without John Wall to start, and then they kind of, you know, showed that they're an incomplete team without Wall, and that's fine. I think, you know, there's a good roster there, but at the same time, I think a lot of people expect them to reach greatness, and they haven't done it, and I don't know that they ever will, to be honest with you. Even with the Eastern Conference allegedly up for grabs, I don't know that this Washington team, even with Wall at full strength, is capable of actually taking a hold of the Eastern Conference there. So, and it's
funny,
just
missing something, and they didn't make a deal at the trade deadline of any significance, which was surprising. Especially, you know, there were rumors that they were shopping Marcin Gortat. And I don't think he's the problem in Washington, but I guess he's a big enough contract that you think maybe you can get something back for him. Maybe some sort of package of him and Oubre could have fetched something back, but they didn't make a move.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can make a case that Indiana deserves to be in the top 10 also. I mean, they're actually tied with the Bucks as far as their overall standings are concerned. So
we have the Cavs at 10. And again, this happened before the trade deadline. This happened before Cleveland blew out Boston on Sunday. We expect that the Cavaliers will probably rise to the top 5 the next time we do this, right?
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Yeah, I think everybody loves what they're seeing already. And just the excitement around it anyway will affect the voters, I think, especially Locked On Rockets. They can obviously be easily swayed. It's ridiculous. So no Heat, no Miami Heat in the top 10. I don't think they deserved it at the time of these rankings, but with Dwayne Wade there, they just broke off a five game losing streak. Hopefully we see him in here the next week when we do this again.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions for next week and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.